Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. Anytime the Orioles are home on Fridays, we're going to be at Fadley's. I'll have the Pac-Man scratch off in the Maryland Lottery I'll be giving away. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multi Care, as well as Liberty Pure Solutions. They keep my water clean. They keep your well water clean. You can find more at LibertyPureSolutions.com. And you can find me at Fadley's, Big Crab Cake, Shrimp Salad. We're going to be doing the Crab Cake Tour at Pappas in late May. We're going to be at State Fair in June. We're going to be at Costas in June. We're going to be Coco's in June, but Fadley's in the near short term. And I was going to invite this guy out. I mean, I owe him at least two Fadley's crab cakes and probably a side of mac and cheese. He is a man that I didn't realize could spot a lacrosse Hall of Famer at 100 yards in a town like Syracuse, New York.
Not bad.
He is a born to run Hall of Famer and a one-time Oriole executive, one-time Major League Baseball executive, one-time Texas Rangers vice president as well. He is now settled in as the good professor at Georgetown University in regard to all things sport business. And Marty Conway, you know, so much changes so quickly. You know, one moment Peter Angelos is alive and owning the team and John Angelos isn't going anywhere. And the next minute we have a billionaire in a splash outfit out in left field squirting fans. Boy, we've come a long way, baby, haven't we?
Whiplash, and it's happened so fast, right? It happened literally almost overnight in that time. What was it? I don't know, 4 weeks before opening day, somewhere like that, that they announced, you know, the purchase of a percentage of the team. And then what, another 3 weeks passed, Peter passes away, and then opening day, and now here's where we are. So in the last 8 to 10 weeks, it feels like whiplash, right, in terms of what's changed around, excuse me, in and around the franchise. So, but yeah, and by the way, do not underestimate me. I'm a great celebrity spotter in crowds. I'm pretty good at finding people as soon as we walk in. I scan the room, and I'm usually pretty good about that.
Well,
so.
I'll take you to Taylor Swift next time I go to Taylor Swift. It would be the first time I go to Taylor Swift. All right, so I don't even know where to open the can of worms with all of this other than to say, look, I'm not going to kiss your ass too much because, you know, I respect you. And you are one of the people that if I bought the team or if Mr. Rubenstein would have called me January 23rd and said, hey, I hear that, you know, Peter hated you. Perfect. We're going to hire you and you're going to bring people in. Who would you bring in and who would be the brain trust? You would certainly be on that committee. I would call Rick Vaughn. I would call Charles Steinberg. I would call all the people that understood Baltimore, not Sashi Brown, as an example, or Chad Steele, people who knew Baltimore. People, you're not even from Baltimore. I learned that, you know, Syracuse cop, family, best friend, Carrier Dome, awful seats, concrete, awful sound, nice little town, good coffee. But like you weren't from here, but you figured it out. And 30 years later, you're still here and you're figuring it out every single day. We both predicted that $1.7 billion would buy you a rich guy who's from Baltimore, who has some roots here. Now, is TJ Brightman going to run it? Is Greg Bader going to run it? Is Jennifer Grandal going to who's going to run Masson? What are they going to do with Masson? Like all of these things that were out there. And I will use this with you because this is your word. You would always say Mr. Angelos was unorthodox. Well, putting the splash outfit on and going to left field, that's unorthodox too. In a lot of ways. If you were the guy day one and you were his handler and you were handling me and putting my press credential under review and all of that, what the advice you would give, and I know I could go back and rewind you 8 weeks ago, but I think it would be something like, don't be Peter Angelos. Don't you know, engage. Dude, he must be – maybe you're consulting because engaging is putting on the rubber ducky outfit and going to left field. You can't get more engagement than that.
All right. Yeah. Look, I think it's Google's philosophy or mission, which is do no harm, right? That's your first obligation to do that, which isn't, it's not, you know, it's not that difficult to actually, you know, I've said this publicly and privately, the most difficult thing about owning a professional sports team typically is getting the team, getting it from whoever is selling it, whatever, running the team, et cetera. Is not usually as hard as actually getting it, financing it, getting partners, raising money, doing things of sort like that. So the do no harm principle is one that usually is pretty easily adhered to do it. A couple of things about it. Number one is, you know, walking into any business, literally the day that it opens, whether it's opening day or whether you're opening a store or whatever you're doing, if you walk into it, the season is baked for the most part. There are a few things you could change along the way, and maybe as you get closer to the postseason, you could do that. But, you know, the prices have been determined, the policies, the philosophies, and all those things.
Fireworks night, determined. All that's determined.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Right. So there's going to be very, very few changes that you can make that have a meaningful impact. Now, publicly, that's different. As you said earlier, just not being Peter or John Angelos is something, you know, to aspire to. But leadership of a professional sports team over time, especially if you grew up around that team, Dan Snyder grew up around the Commanders, right? Dan Snyder was popular until he wasn't. He was popular because he bought the team and he was more in the moment, like he was available, et cetera. So you
even
run down
did my
list
show. I found the tape. He did my national syndicated show 25 years ago. Dan Snyder on for 10 minutes.
Yeah. So always coming in as the number one fan is a nice way to come in, whether, like I said, no matter whether what kind of team that you buy. Over time, though, the arc of that bends in more difficult directions because you have to make some really difficult decisions on payroll, on signing players long-term or not signing players long-term, or other key decisions. And I think I repeat what I said earlier. Some of the most important things that they have to sort out is the untangling of Masson. I'm an Xfinity customer, and I got my new channel lineup, a new pricing lineup the other day, and I just printed it out and I started to look at it. It's very confusing. And one of the things that's happening is Masson is being bumped to a new tier that Xfinity has. I think it's called Choice or something like that. And so we all of us have to sort out.
What does that mean financially?
So they're bundling it. So what they're doing is to the customer, Masson, and I presume I didn't look carefully, some other channels, sports related channels, are moving up to a higher paid tier. So instead of it being included in your basic package and being charged for it, whether you watch it or not, now you're going to have to make an active selection to say, I want to pay an additional, whether it's $10 a month, I have to look carefully at that number, charged to my bill, that which means then I'm going to make an effort to really watch it if I'm paying additional services. Xfinity has rolled out a program in Baltimore and the surrounding area where they're phasing it in. So by the end of the season, if you still have it, you'll be paying the full, I think it's actually $20 a month for that entire package, for that tier. So what that means is over time, the number of folks who are exposed to the games are likely to drop during the course of the season. Because if you were getting the channel as part of your broad basic package, and now it's being phased in, into a tier, then you're going to lose some of that audience, perhaps, who are able to watch the games. So access to the games is going to be a really important thing to sort out during the course of this year.
If you don't have the game, you can't watch the game. I mean, I talk about paywalls all the time, Marty, in media. I mean, Baltimore Banner, if you don't pay them, you're not reading it. Same thing with The Sun, same thing with any The Athletic, any of these places. And I often think, like, you know, nobody's cheating anymore, or, you know, like, I don't know, you put that much effort into it, but these Fire Sticks and these, internet, what are they, VPN?
VPN, like, a virtual private network, a VPN.
Yeah, I mean, all of these ways to sort of cheat it a little bit. You're really going out of your way if it's $20 a month to get the baseball games. And you and I have talked at length about whatever the next model is going to be. Out of this $20 a month, I almost reverted, Marty. I almost said, how much is John getting of this? You know, John ain't getting anything. He's got his $1.7 billion. Yeah. But this $20 that you're going to give them, it's 120, what's 20 times 12, it's $240 a year, right? So how much of that does Masson get? How much of that does Xfinity get? And, like, I know they used to get $3-4 a sub for over millions of subs. I'm assuming of the people that want this, if there's a Cinemax or another this, that sports channel, there are 5 sports channels you get for this bundle. I don't know how much of it they get, but, like, I wonder how much they're bleeding. You know what I mean? How much? Because I do wonder this when the Orioles and the Nationals are playing each other and I see 2 really subpar broadcasts, by the way, on Tuesday night. I mean, the Choice was bad and badder and worse and worser in regard to the broadcast, because that's where they are. I know that there's going to be a split in all of this stuff, but I keep thinking to myself, when Masson isn't Masson anymore and it's just Orioles television, not, you know, Orioles and Nationals, if it really is a split, how many people will it take to finance this on a spreadsheet that Mr. Rubenstein says, well, I got $1.7 billion, I'm in. The math has to make sense to somebody, to him, right? To, I mean, even if he's just stroking the check, the math of the new media, it doesn't really make sense to most anybody yet, does it?
Yeah, well, we're definitely in a period of flux and it's changing. So just to back up on that, if it's $19.99, roughly $20 a month, and it's a bundle of several channels, whether it's MLB Network and Masson or whatever that package is, I have to look at that carefully to see what's in there. Obviously, you're sprinkling out to each of those entities based on who takes your package. But presumably, the principle is if you are operating at 3 million subscribers in your broad basic cable footprint, and they were all getting Masson at some price, right? You're getting a smaller amount, but you're getting a larger universe. Now, over time, you're flipping that model to maybe a smaller universe of people who are stepping in to take the choice package, but you're getting a larger percentage of that $19.99, presumably, to do it, right? That's what's happening. But that's going to be over time. That's going to take months and months.
That's also going to create, they have to recruit. The Orioles will have to recruit customers instead of, oh, you get cable? We don't care if you hate us and Nestor's family was paying Mr. Angelo's money just by simply having the cable plugged into the wall. That's going to go away.
Right. It puts organizations, and for example, both the Orioles and the Nationals would be in the situation where they would have to be actively marketing not only the team and a membership, but also including access to the games, whether that is through your pay television package of Xfinity, you want to encourage that, or some other streaming option, which I think is probably coming to them, which is if you choose not to do that, if you're stepping down in cable and you're not going to have this choice package, here's a package. I think the two Pittsburgh teams, the Penguins and the Pirates, just came out with their package. And I don't remember if it was $29.99 a month or $39.99 a month, where you'll be able to get on a streaming package on an app on your smart TV, you'll be able to get access to all the games. So whether you're selling it directly to consumers or you're selling it indirectly through Comcast Xfinity, you're going to have to be increasingly in that business of offering access to your games. And then I think the next package from there is, what games can you put strategically on the over-the-air network here in Baltimore and or Washington, whether that's channel 11, 13, 45, you're going to need certain times of the year, whether it's opening day and other games, you're going to want those on your highest profile, most accessible channels. So that's part of the strategy that will have to be developed by not just the Orioles and Nationals, but all teams going forward in this ever-evolving situation where, like you were saying, many, many more people have paywalls in front of them now. And how do you actively and aggressively offer ways in through that paywall, premium promotions, so that people don't revert to the VPN, which, you know, they're paying somebody in Europe $59 for some device, which allows them to essentially pirate the games, and you don't get any of that revenue. So you want to do whatever you can to even get portions of it.
Marty Conway is here. He's the good professor of all things sports and business, and sort of I haven't watched any of the Rubenstein stuff. So like him with Cal Ripken, I saw there's an hour of that pitching Baltimore as a business place and he and Cal together. I kind of thought I'd have my press credential back by now. And I thought I would like meet him. I don't really want to meet him on the internet, watching him on TV. I'll say this, the handling of me by a communications professional, which is always a little tenuous for me, if you know me over 40 years and you watch my documentary, I'm being handled. I'm under review, whatever that means. I don't even know. They haven't even told me what that means. So I'm reporting that to everybody who's asking me. And there were 100 people last week, but the handling part of this, where he buys the team, he already has a communications guy, he has an internal team that work for him. I'm sure he's a billionaire. He sits on these boards. He does all of these things. He has a television show and the Bloomberg and all of the celebrity this and money that and finance world and all of that stuff. In your opinion, these commercials, this idea to go splash people, is this TJ Brightman and the current team coming to him with ideas of things to get him involved? Is this some third party coming to him with storyboards and saying, well, Mr. Rubenstein, you can go splash people in left field, or you can do a commercial with Gunnar Henderson and Cal Ripken about this cute little shortstop thing where your desk is upstairs? Like, it feels to me like ESPN's This is SportsCenter writers are involved in this, that this is orchestrated, that this, it's not meant to feel that way. It's meant to feel like this was Mr. Rubenstein's idea to go squirt people and sit in left field. I don't know. I don't know how handled, orchestrated it is. I can say from my end, you know, it feels like they've hired a firm to say, this is how to Johnny Bravo yourself and make yourself ingratiated here, or they've done some sort of market research, or Mr. Rubenstein showed up last week and said, hey, it'd be fun to be the splash guy. We're giving the bobblehead away. I'll go splash people. I don't know, but whatever it is, it smells nice to the fans right now. It certainly is, I mean, incredible. It's unorthodox, but different unorthodox than what we had before. But I do wonder, these TV commercials and this sort of rollout of ideas, you say, that aren't fireworks night, but they're totally designed to make you, as you began this, forget about Peter. And it made me feel differently. Curio gave me 4 tickets, and I sat on the dugout last Thursday heckling the Yankees on 100-degree day as they were getting their ass kicked. It was great. And I pulled my credit card out and used it in the ballpark. I spent money in the ballpark for the first time in 20 years because I felt like John Angelos wasn't getting the money. And I don't hate Rubenstein, no Rubenstein, like Rubenstein. I'd like to get my press credential back. That would be number one for my integrity test for him when he's allowing my Caucasian employee to have a seat, and some days our seat's empty and I can't sit in it. But that's for me. But for the fans, this is, they're eating this up like what the wrestling world would say, they're marks for whatever it is. He's doing everything that's the anti-Peter in such an incredible way to win friends and influence people. And it's working beautifully. And at some point, to your point, there'll be bad news, signing players, not any of that. But 6 weeks in, I don't know that we can give anything but A pluses on the team, how great the team is, how the perception that there's a new owner. So the perception so strong that I don't have my press pass back, and I gave him money on my credit card last week inside the ballpark because I want to be a customer. I want to be welcomed. I want to feel all of that, but nothing's more welcoming than the owner in goggles and a tutu out squirting fans in left field. Like, that's something I was not expecting from anybody that owned the team, quite frankly. It's out there.
Yeah, look, I think it's been gradual, and it's probably been measured. It's probably been, sort of more than measured, but, you know, really looked at strategically to see what was the engagement and reception, even from the opening press conference. And then small things after that, which you saw him, you know, strategically on his Twitter profile, and other areas like that. My suspect is that each step they've sort of analyzed, okay, was this favorable to you, sir? Did you feel comfortable in it? All those things. And it's a logical next step to do it. That would be my, whether it's from inside the warehouse or from, you know, PR teams that he was worked with, that obviously he has, either way. We saw this a little bit. I'll go back to the days of Eli Jacobs when he first bought the team. He had folks, because Eli was not somebody that was comfortable in the public at all, and he had folks who were trying to make that so. Now, it didn't work. It never worked. And some of the things that were on the docket actually never happened. So there is usually thought to, how do we project this profile to do it? So I suspect that my hunch is that over time, they've looked at each one of these times that he's appeared in something, a commercial on Twitter, and they've gauged the favorability, unfavorability. I'm sure it's highly, highly favorable at this point, because as you said, the team is winning. They've got a young roster. They added a free agent pitcher over the course of the winter. So a lot of those things have built up to a very favorable first two months of the season. Baseball is a long season. We play in baseball every day, so there is no hiding from reality as you go about it. As I said, I think that's today. I think some of the medium to longer term challenges that put them in front of it, which is television, ballpark development, an all-star game, some other things like that, will need to come. But for right now, bathe in the moment. No pun intended for being out there squirting people to do it. That's great. And as long as it lasts, and then it's favorable, you just have to be careful to watch for the period when it's about the team and not about who owns the team and who runs the team, or whether it's the general manager, president, et cetera. Fans love to see access to an owner in every sport that I've ever been around, until a certain point, like I said. So while it runs, let it run. And I think it's interesting, and it's good for Baltimore in this regard, because it's very clear David Rubenstein is from and all about Baltimore. He's very authentic in that regard, which I think is really good for the Orioles franchise in particular, because of their longevity in the market and how they came here. So I think it's really important to have that. And again, I think that had a lot to do with who John and Mrs. Angelos decided to sell the team to. I think they wanted to control who that was. And I think they made a wise choice with David Rubenstein. But like I said, the question is over the longer period of time, seasons, not one season, how the franchise is positioned strategically and how successful it is financially, because ultimately that's how you're able to fund payroll, is through all those important financial decisions.
Marty Conway is our guest. He's the good professor of all things sports business at Georgetown University, longtime Major League Baseball executive with the Orioles and the Rangers, amongst others. Saw a picture of Uberoth the other day, by the way, maybe think of you. Authenticity, that was a word you threw in. Sure. That began very early in the morning when I was talking to Bill Cole and Leonard Raskin and other people. That's the word I keep coming back to. With Luke Jones, I've used authenticity. I think it's the word people have been using about my documentaries. You sort of can't fake being here 40 years, and you can't fake – You can't fake having an Orioles shirt on when you're 5 years old, in my case, or David Rubenstein's case, or in, the 35, 40 years you've been here, doing it and feeling like it's yours. Right. And, I've known you a long time. I always sensed you had some real bile about the Angelos thing, and you didn't mind coming on and talking about it being unorthodox and all that, because you felt like it was yours and it was something that was wrecked. And that's the way Charles Steinberg felt about it. That's the way Rick Vaughn, that's the way all of us felt about it. Anybody, and you, blood, sweat, tears, decade being there, more than that, working in, out, trying to build relationships, do things the right way. Or as Charlie Ekman would say, be a right guy, back in the day. And authenticity is something you can't buy. It's something that Sashi Brown can't buy when he's boxing me out of CEO club luncheons, because he's not from around here. And he wouldn't value that or know how to value that. Or Chad Steele would never understand. He's not from here. They wouldn't understand the Key Bridge going down. They just wouldn't understand those things. There's something about Rubenstein that this authenticity that you speak of, when he goes on the broadcast and talks about Louis Aparicio and Gus Triandos and Ribs Palmer, and talks about walking from City College over to ball games, and then decides to go out with the fans and do this stunt, promotion, whatever we would call it, reminds me of William Donald Schaefer, who also had authenticity, right? Yeah, like right, to the right. Day he died, he was a man of the, love him, hate him, whatever. Mm-hmm. Authenticity. You work real hard down there with those kids at Georgetown and rich kids and all that. No matter the money, you can't buy it. You can't buy it. It's the one thing you can't buy, and he has it. And that spiking the ball on that is everything, given where we've been the last three decades.
Yeah, no, I think that's, what you talk about is spot on. It's especially in Baltimore. I think it's unique in that regard. I think Pittsburgh is unique. I think Milwaukee is unique. In St. Louis is unique in that the ownership really needs to fit in with the community. Baltimore is a city of neighborhoods. So as Rubenstein has often said, the first thing he asks people when he meets them and they say, I'm from Baltimore, he said, where you go to high school, right? Because it really tells you kind of about the region or part of the city or the county that you're from. And then the conversation.
Am I getting profiled because I'm a Dundalk guy? Is that what you're telling me? Is that why I'm under review? Are all Dundalk guys under review?
Yeah, no, what I meant is that I think it tells a lot of people just about what your experience of Baltimore is based on.
Say you're from Dundalk, Fikeville, they know you're a real guy. You know what I mean? Like that, they just
exactly
know. They know what they're
exactly. Getting. But I do think it's important, like I said, and I think you highlight that as much as possible as you can, because it's a fun thing. You can play along with it. It's really super helpful when you're 10 or 12 games over 500. Baseball's the ultimate, like I said. It's like going to work every day, like those of us that go to work every day. You play baseball every day, so after 162 games, you know how good you actually are. So when you're over 500, you want to exploit that. We'll see if things turn differently, whether the tactics turn to be a part of it, but it's important. And again, I think it's important for this community to see. Now, I think that additionally they'll rally behind it. As you said, his work with Cal Jr. and others is about resurgence of the business community to support. There's going to be a lot of need for that going forward because the ballpark itself can't stay the way it is. There has to be some expansion around it. There has to be some development. It has to grow out towards the community as it always was intended to do. And I think it's been stuck in ownership and political issues over the last decade plus that probably lost time. And now it's time to make up for that because that entire football baseball complex needs to grow together. Right now it's separated by some parking lots. I think it needs to grow in ways that people feel comfortable being there on non-game days and other days on weekends. And
It's always felt like two
also,
different places, though, right? I mean, just psychologically, physically, all the years of going down to Ray Lewis and all the years of the awful baseball in it, it really feels like that freeway that separates it. That's the baseball side. That's the football side. One's purple, one's orange. Blah, 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 blah. Like, it's not like that in other places. Philadelphia's not that way, right?
And bringing new and different events to that area. So for a while, we had a run of bringing the men's lacrosse championship on Memorial Day weekend. That sort of ran its course. We've had some concerts at the baseball stadium, but I think generally speaking, that area has to fulfill its destiny with a casino and a driving range on one end and the baseball leading up to Howard Street, Utah Street, all the way up through. It has to fulfill its destiny to revitalize the west side of it. And I think it can definitely do that, but it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of effort. It's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take a lot of relationship building with commercial developers and other folks, not only in Baltimore, but people who have interest in Baltimore, but maybe don't live here. I think we're going to have to generate some enthusiasm for that. That's what's really important to really make it fulfill itself, like I said, so that in 2030, it looks a whole lot different than it did when it was originally built in 1992.
So if you're listening, Marty Conway is here. We'll stop boring you with the business of sports. And hey, Marty, how about that team? They're pretty good, huh? Dude, every night I pinch my wife and I'm like, it's the best team I've ever seen. Like, I've never seen anything like how good the team can be, and they haven't won anything and whatever. But the prosperity level of seeing 22, 24, 25, 26-year-old guys come up who aren't might be's, might, I mean, and when these guys go in little slumps, cows or whatever, they'll figure it out. Westberg's figured it out now. Boy, this thing has settled in very, very quickly. New ownership, splash zone, blah, blah, blah. All of this is happening. This is what you've lived here 30 years, and I've been here 50 years, sort of waiting for, right? Like, this is all of it in the bag of donuts, and it's hard on a daily basis, especially when they get shut out and burns, the morning after you lose, it's different. But this is as good as it gets from the team on the field and the pure potentiality of what they can sell as a brand.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it has to do with player development, right? It's one thing to, be in a position. There's a lot of teams that have had first and second picks or multiple picks over two or three rounds. But if you look at what the Washington Nationals did, they built that championship contender and that World Series winner on the Strasburg and Harper drafts, right? And the other talent that came around that. Other teams have been in that position repeatedly, drafted high, and haven't been able to convert to do that. So not only drafting the talent, but developing the talent. And increasingly today, Nestor, it's about the number one ability in sports today is availability. And if your best players, who typically you're paying the most to, if they're not available because of physical health, Tommy John surgeries, all the things that go with it, if they're not available, then your chances of winning go dramatically down. So I think one of the untold stories probably of the Orioles' success has been the general availability of their players and pitchers. I can't think of, there's been the occasional John Means situation, but generally speaking, they've done a great job of not only developing their players, but keeping them healthy and available because this is the window for those players who you drafted before they hit arbitration years, before they hit free agency years. You have to capitalize during this period. And the number one thing is they've got to be on the field. So hats off to their backroom staff, medical staff, all the things that they do to keep these really good young players on the field for 150, 160 games, making 30, 35 starts. I think if they sort out the bullpen with this particular team, I think that's their only question going forward is, do they get the same production in the bullpen this year as they've gotten in the last 2 years? So if they get that, then I think they're in a great position come September and October.
A lot easier to beat the Yankees 3 out of 4 when they don't have Gerrit Cole coming at you, right? So same thing would be said for the Orioles. If Rodriguez weren't here and Means and Bradish don't come back, this is a different story 2 weeks ago than it is right now. And I think that makes us all even more bullish on all of this, especially as maybe Austin Hayes comes back and they're trying to figure out Mayo and Holiday and out on the farm. Marty Conway is here. He is monitoring this new ownership group. He will be watching every splash. By the way, I went before the segment. I went online to see if I could buy tickets in the splash. And there are 4 seats in the second row right in front of Mr. Rubenstein, $205 a piece. I'm thinking if I wore a Baltimore Positive shirt, the cameras are going to be on out there. It could be a hell of an inside marketing effort. What do you think?
Wow. Well, that tells you that's the secondary market, because I think those tickets originally sell for $10 or $12 in the futures.
It's a markup.
Game day, so,
hey, they're not the scalpers. They provide a service. And for that service, you must pay, you know?
Yeah, and they better do it before Maryland passes the law, I think, that's pending, actually, on what you can actually charge for a ticket. So more to come on that.
All right. I will I won't pay $98 to dine with Sashi Brown. I will not pay $205 to sit in the vicinity where Mr. Rubenstein could squirt me. I already got squirted by the last ownership group. I don't need to get squirted by the new group. But the Orioles are red hot, and we got a race coming next week. I didn't even talk any Preakness with you and all that, but I did get a chance to talk to Alan Foreman. I got a chance to talk to David Richardson. I have Dick Girardi on last week, too, just talking about the future of Pimlico and what's going to happen to Lara with a couple of Preaknesses down the line. And then this whole Stronach and naming for the Preakness and what the race is going to be here and what the future of the race course is going to be. We're going to be all about that next week. Hopefully the race here will be as good as the Kentucky Derby, where 3 horses come down to the end and win by a nose. So good times around here. Big week, springtime, baseball, first place baseball, new ownership, splashy, splashy, all of that good stuff, and rookies reporting in Owings Mills. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.